Well, the country is on the edge of insolvency, and the East Coast is burning up to a crisp. And since I can't do anything about the weather, I thought I would talk about the government. Just this, in fact, that the other day, yesterday I think it was, or the day before, John Bonnier was talking about our Torah portion. Not directly, but he said, the president and I take the same oath of office. We have the same responsibility. And our Torah portion is all about oaths, things that you swear. And I started to think about why it is that people swear things. Why do we ask politicians to swear before they go into office? Why do we, in fact, say, I swear I will do this? Ask yourself this question, which is related and casts, I think, a certain light on that question. Are you wiser than you were a year ago? Will you be wiser a year from now than you are now? If the answer is yes, that you are wiser now than you were a year ago, so why would you ever swear an oath to bind you to do something later on, when later on you'll be wiser and you should make the decision? The psychology of taking a vow is, I know later on I'm not going to want to do this, so I'm promising now that even though I know I won't want to, I'm going to do it anyway. In other words, my decision now is better than my decision will be in 6 months. Which leads you to think, by the way, that the reason politicians take oaths of office is because when they get in office, they're not going to want to do the right thing. And then it's going to be a battle between the oath they took and what it is that they want to do, or, in the case of the United States, are doing. This morning, in the Torah portion, we talk about a neder and a shvuah, and just to give you a little technical background, those are different. A neder changes the status of an object. If I say I make a neder, which I'm not doing, but just if, that I will never sit in that seat, according to Jewish law, it changes the spiritual status of that seat to make it something that I should never sit in. But if I take a shvuah, an oath that I will never sit during services, then it changes not the status of the seats, but my status. So in Jewish tradition, there are two different kinds of promises that one can make. One changes the world, one changes oneself. But both of them bind you to future action. As if to say, I know better now than I will then, so I promise now. You remember the scene in Homer's Odyssey when Odysseus is worried about the fact that the ship is going to go past the sirens and their song will seduce men to come to the island where they will live and then die, and he knows that he won't be able to resist it, so he tells the sailors to bind him to the mast so that even though he'll want to go, he won't be able to. And that's exactly what happens. They tie him to the mast, he hears the song, he can't resist it, but he also can't move. And that is the physical equivalent of an oath. I'm going to bind myself so that I can't move, so to speak, and I will have to fulfill this thing that I don't want to fulfill. And it should end there. And if human beings were simple creatures, it would end there. And if you think we used to be simple, and then we got complicated, today we're so complicated, but ancient people, they used to be simple, then let me tell you, it didn't end there for ancient Jews either. Because they also made promises that they later didn't want to fulfill. And they got upset about it. In fact, the most horrific in the Bible is the promise of Yiftach, where Yiftach says, if I win the war, then whatever comes out of my house, because after all, animals and other things dwelt in homes, whatever comes out of my house when I come back, I will slaughter to God. And what comes out of his house? His daughter. And it seems, although it's not completely explicit, that in fact he fulfills his vow. And his daughter goes off and bewails her fate and then is sacrificed by her own father. So what did the rabbi say about this, apart from the fact that Yiftach is not a good guy? They say, jerk. I'm being nice here. You should have gone to the rabbinic court and had your vow annulled and said, I took this hasty vow, I don't want to fulfill it, and the court will say, we absolve you from the vow, you don't have to kill your daughter. But they say he was the leader of the tribes, he was too proud, he was too arrogant, and as a result, he did this terrible thing. There is some logic to that. Hemingway said, you should always do sober what you said you would do when you're drunk. It will teach you to keep your mouth shut. And we have all made rash resolutions that if we had to fulfill them later, would have probably helped us not to make such rash resolutions in the future. But because human beings are so conflicted and so various inside, in fact, as you know, we do have a mechanism to annul vows. Not only do we have a mechanism, but it is a centerpiece of the Jewish liturgical year, Kol Nidre. Kol Nidre absolves you, depending on whether you use the Sephardic or the Ashkenazic version, either from the vows you have made or from the vows you will make before God. It doesn't absolve you, by the way, from the vows you make to other people. Sorry, they have to absolve you of that. But it does absolve you from the vows you make before God because the tradition recognized way back when that your intentions may outstrip your ability to fulfill them. But the rabbis were under no illusion about this. The Torah is quite explicit. What you say you are going to do, you have to do. And so the Mishnah, that is, the rabbis in the time of the Mishnah and the Talmud come along in Chagiga and they say, it's true that we have the absolution of vows, but it completely rests on air. In other words, there's no real foundation in the Jewish tradition to absolve vows you take, but we're going to do it anyway. And the reason we're going to do it anyway is because people are too darn complicated and we can't tell everyone whatever you vow you have to fulfill. After all, remember Yiftach. So where does that leave us? First of all, there is some wisdom in not vowing. Then you don't have a problem. Except that often we vow not to force ourselves to do something, but to induce someone else to believe that we'll do it. You say, I'll do it. They say, sure you will. You say, I swear I'll do it. And then you vow. So first of all, the binding of yourself is not only for yourself, but, of course, it obligates you. And according to the Jewish tradition, that obligation is serious. And in some sense, is permanent. But we do have this mechanism to absolve you from vows. And that's because we know that where you are at one point in your life, wiser or less wise, is not necessarily where you will be tomorrow, next week, next month, next year. We are, by and large, not very good predictors of how we will feel. Sometimes we're pretty good on what we will do. We're generally not so good on what we will feel. As Dr. Lieber of blessed memory, the president of the University of Judaism and a longtime member of Sinai Temple and briefly a rabbi here at Sinai Temple, once told me, he said, many years ago, I coined a word. You can foreknow things, but you can't forefeel them. So you don't know how you're going to feel when X, Y, or Z happens. And therefore, to bind yourself is a perilous undertaking. And to absolve yourself is sometimes necessary. But what all of this should remind us is that Judaism takes your word very seriously. That which you speak, you are supposed to do. In the Torah this morning, there's no question about it. You have to fulfill what you do. And the only reason you're allowed to be absolved is because our tradition is premised on the idea that we are all flawed. We're all imperfect. We all make mistakes. And there has to be, even in the most rigid areas of the tradition, there has to be some provision for sheer human weakness. So, tell the truth. Try not to vow. When you do, try to fulfill it. But if you absolutely, positively can't, then know that the tradition will help you undo that which you have unwisely done. All of which tells you that people were always complicated. And what Kohelet said more than 2,000 years ago is still true, which is God made people simple, but they have engaged in too much reasoning. It was true then, it is true now, and we'll see, as regards the insolvency of the United States, whether it will continue to be true in the future. Shabbat shalom. Shabbat shalom.